are you creating? You're creating a bomb.
And then it hit me like a train.
I don't know me anymore. I only know me as a parent.
So I've been winging it. And this is Shift
Happens. Of our three-part series, collaboration with Winning Strategies and Norman Nix. This episode, we will be discussing parental alienation and the signs of it and how to prevent it. Norman, can you please give us some background about yourself?
Yeah, as far as occupation-wise, hi, everybody. I'm Norman Nix from The Norman Nix Show. I was a paralegal early on out of high school after having lost my first set of kids to my first BM. Second BM tried to imitate success with less class. And so I made sure I became a paralegal. So not only could I understand the ins and outs of the court system and how to act and what to expect, but also to kind of have a leg up at the time of intimidation. So for my background, I was a paralegal regarding a law firm for here in Arizona. It was a bankruptcy attorney. This was a while back. And then I did a bunch of financial management jobs, and then I became a paralegal for another debt law firm called Lexis Law Firm. And I was a paralegal there for 2 years. Using my paralegal skills with both of those entities and being in family court with two sets of baby mamas allowed me to get full custody of my second set of kids and eventually go from 50-50 to full custody with child support, which I have right now. So as far as my background, I set up the Norman Nix Show to try to give fathers that curb that I didn't have when I was younger, because we didn't have advocacy groups or any podcasts or anybody reaching out to us. So I think the reason why I'm here and my background is to make sure that I give those young fathers that time with their kids instead of that wasted time in court or trying to be frustrated, anticipation, like Isaac was saying, with why do I have to keep arguing with you in court? Well, as a paralegal, with me sitting in courtrooms and actually studying the court system, he is absolutely right. It's not designed for us. It's designed to move at a snail's pace. But if you can realize that, it allows you to prepare and to not have unreasonable expectations. Race, it's actually a marathon. It's not about being the nice guy, it's about being the good guy. So that's basically me in a nutshell.
Great. So I wanted to get into this, and really for the listeners who are just unsure, you know, I want to get into exactly what parental alienation is. So Isaac, if you can give a little background of like, what is your definition of parental alienation?
So parental alienation, to my understanding and from my experience, I see it as where you have two parents. You have your custodial parent, which is the parent that the child lives with. And you have the non-custodial parent. I would fall in the non-custodial parent category because my child does not live with me. And so the parental alienation is where you have one parent who is undermining a court order or not a court order, but the relationship between the parents. So preventing the other parent from having a relationship with the kid, communication with the kid. So if it's said for me to, in a court order, that I can call on these days, missing the phone calls, not returning phone calls, interfering with pickups, drop-offs, things of that nature. But then also the things that may be said depending on how old the kids are. So things saying like, oh, you know, your dad feels like this about you, and if he really cared, he would be there. You know, things like that, that puts a strain between that parent and that child relationship being built. That's how I've seen parental alienation in my, at least within my own case. And of course, please correct me if I'm wrong, but that's how I see it. That's how I've experienced it in my own life and previously.
And then Norman, what is your definition of parental alienation?
Well, in my definition, there's a kind of a rainbow of different categories of parental alienation. Like Isaac said, you can have the baby mama who's very, very testy in court and wants to push her boundaries because she feels, and not to be disrespectful, but feels that because she has a uterus, that she's the nurturer and she should be the one that has say or absolute say, even before the judge gets a chance to even put his foot down. So as far as parental alienation, you can have, usually it comes with what Isaac said, where the mother is trying to keep the parent away. But there's parental alienation like Isaac's going through, where it's a revengeful thing. There's also like victimizing parent alienation, where they keep the child on their side. That way, even if the child does get a visit with the father, he's on eggshells, or she's on eggshells when she's with the dad, because mom is given the child this victim mentality of what their relationship is like when the child doesn't even know what relationship should be. So they look at their dad as an abuser before they even know what an abuser is, because of fear. And not to keep harking on my videos, but in my videos, I go over parental alienation in more detail and explaining how you have financial parental alienation, where the mother is actually looking at the father saying, well, if you're not paying child support on time, why am I letting you see your son? Well, in court, if you talk to any judge in any state, they'll tell you that child support is not dictated on your visits. Just because you can't afford to pay child support does not give the mother the right to violate the court order and not let you see your child. So there's a wide range of perspective when it comes to parental alienation. But the more classic ones are retaliation and victimization. So.
And then we also have Eric here from Winning Strategies. What's your perspective on parental alienation?
Oh, boy. well, you know, I just went to court, and the judge was like, didn't even want to hear my side. And I'm looking at it to whereas, okay, you know what's going on or not being done with her, okay? You know I can provide a better outcome, I would say, educationally for my son. I had documentation where he's failing, okay? However, the court still chose in their power to take my son and just give sole custody to the mother, okay? So I'm now in the process of putting together my appeal for that. I'm doing my appeal myself. And I'm using the judge's rules and the judge's what the judges stated in court, because I had to order the transcript, and I'm using it against him, okay, to show that you can't do this. This is against Maryland's law, and basically knowing a bit about our son's background, she has mental health issues, okay. And with those mental health issues, it's for the father or that parent, that's the other parent that's there, to be there to help out, because I am here. I could see if I was dead someplace, or I mean, not dead someplace, but not here, and therefore the system had to assist her. But I am here. I'm willing to do this. So you should at least allow me that opportunity. So I see it as. The courts helped the parental alienation a lot, okay? And I was just looking, I told Norman Friday, I was just Thursday. I was in the law library just researching, and I'm like, gosh, fathers here in Maryland are going through this. I bet fathers across the country are going through this. And I just want to just, since it's us three and we're in from different states, I'll use our state's background more. And I just found out from sharedparenting.org that Nevada and Arizona are in like the B minus areas or B plus areas as far as shared custody. where I am in Maryland is a D minus. So I look at that and I'm like, come on, something has to give. And it really has to give with the courts not always siding with the mother.
Let me piggyback on that. Now, my theory on that, and not to get racially motivated, is if you look at the demographics of people of color, and the demographics of people of color out here in the West, there is less city folk out here, less people of color out here, more integrated into a melting pot than there is in Maryland, in DC, in Louisiana, and certain counties in Texas. You know what I mean? They're heavily Black populated. And with those heavily Black populated cities and counties, the regulators in those cities are not, those lawmakers are not Black. Those lawmakers are white, traditionally Southern Black, you know, or Southern, you know, lawmakers that want to make sure there's a suppression on Black lineage. So that way you can't have your kids going to the same school as their kids. Now out here, the courts are more equalized out than they are in the East Coast. And this is my opinion, because again, we have a more of a melting pot out here. They can't be more racially biased out here, because one court, and I've sat in court cases as a paralegal, not just for debt, but for my own court cases, because I don't know if you know this, but just because you have family court doesn't mean you have to show up and leave when your court case is over. You right. can stay there the whole day and watch the judge's whole calendar. And I've done that. Took a day off of work just to study the judge, just to see what these people, how these people piss them off and everything. And I do my homework. So when you're sitting there and you watch these judges and you look at these court cases, you're not just seeing out here in Arizona and Nevada, you're not just seeing all Black faces lined up going in there waiting to get taken for child support. Out here, you actually have conservative white people, some poor white people, Mexicans, you know what I mean? Interracial couple, more interracial couples out here than you do on the East Coast, more or less, especially in the Baltimore, D.C. area, even though it is changing. But out here, it is a true melting pot. So when you get those demographics together, they have to be more fair on this side than they are on the side where the mass huddles of Black people are, and where the more chances of those success stories coming out of those large populations of people can come out of. We can get the tokens out of Nevada and Arizona or whatever, because they're the one-off, you know what I mean? They're not gonna change the momentum. But and if they can put the foot, the neck down on your guys' chest out there in Maryland and Texas and Louisiana, especially New York, especially, you know what I mean? They can make sure that hip hop can stay down. You know what I'm saying? Pop culture and the black aspect can stay down, and Republicans can stay in power. And that's my theory on it. So not to get all political about it, but there's more than one layer to this than just Black, you know, just knowing how to fight in court.
Yeah, and I definitely want to piggyback off what Norman's saying, because yes, I live in Las Vegas, but my actual court order is in Georgia. I am from Atlanta. I'm from the Black Mecca of the United States. And in Atlanta, all right, you have the city of Atlanta and you have the metro cities. All right. And so when you file your court case, you file in the county in which your child lives in. My child lives in the metro city of Gwinnett. All right. That's where my child and that's where her mother lives. And so when we went to court, that's where I had to file my paperwork. And those are the judges I had to deal with. So when I went out there, there was no favor for me as a young Black man. I have tattoos. They don't care about my education. They don't care the fact that I'm an educator. Any of that. They see this young Black man. He has dreadlocks. This girl comes in. She's sad. Threw the book at me. I don't even have a standard order. Any lawyers that I have spoken to, they've said I don't have a standard order. For example, in my order for summer visitation, the court order mandates that I have 3 weeks in the summer, and those weeks are non-consecutive. They can't be back-to-back. So I have to separate them by a week. Well, first of all, how do you plan any type of summer plans with a child non-consecutive, but also that she has to write to plan her own vacations. And if they overlap, her plans supersede mine. So it would cancel out my week if that's what she decided to do. I have seen orders, you know, from just other people I know. I know friends, family who have court orders, and I've never seen an order like that. But coming out of Gwinnett, that's what I got hit with. When I told them of the instances where she would take, where I had, there was times where people who I had enlisted in my family, in my life, to help me with my child, to pick up the child on my behalf and things like that, went behind, told the school, hey, take them off the list. They are not allowed to pick up the child, which interferes with my relationship with the child, and going to the courts, complaining, making them aware. Well, sir, there's really not much we can do, but you can pay us some money to send our sheriffs out to the house, and they may decide to take the child from the mother and give them over. But it's up to that particular officer's discretion. So basically, like he said, the system, from my own personal experience, and again, I'm not in the same position that I was a few years ago in dealing with the mother of my child, and I'm thankful for it. But during those early years of my child's life, there was no help. There was no help. The court was no help to me. The system was not designed, because they told me to my face when they gave me the number of my child support order for one child. And I said, how am I supposed to be able to pay my bills? And the judge said to me, to my face, you need to worry about paying child support and then figure out how to live after that. But you're telling me that it's okay for my child to have a stable home with the mother, but then for the child to, whenever they see me, that I'm in the slums because this is all that I can afford to live. The system is not designed. And so when, you know, I have younger cousins who've had children and things like that, or, you know, out of wedlock. So this is not your wife. This is not somebody you are 100% sure or you're even planning on being with long term. And they're asking me, you know, what should I do? My, you know, should I go back to court? I was just like, if you don't have an ironclad case to prove that this mother is unfit, or that she's intentionally, and it's a pattern, I said, you better think twice, because it's not a guarantee. And it's so sad that we have to have these conversations with our young men and say, hey, even when you're doing everything that you're supposed to do as a man, it can still go against you. And I hate that. I hate that. But the system is designed that way. It's designed, like he said, like Norman said, they don't want us to have that lineage. They want to break it. And it's broken. And they use the system as a way, because like Eric said, it's a slow process. I remember when I filed my paperwork for my court order, because I was not being allowed to see my daughter. I filed the paperwork in December. It was like December 20th. I didn't get a court date until the next July.
Whoa.
I didn't get a court date till the next July. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to show up. So I filed in December. She knew I filed because she had to get served. So she was angry. So for 6 months until we went to court, that woman put me through everything behind my child. Oh, you're not going to see her. Oh, her skin didn't look right when she returned. I think we need to pause on visitation. What? She has eczema. It's documented. What are you talking about? You know, things like that.
Right.
You know, so it's a double-edged sword, because, again, depending on where you are and those demographics, like you said, being on the West Coast, I just moved out here in July. It's so different. You know, the interracial couples and things like that, to me coming from the Black Mecca of Atlanta, I'm not used to seeing that. And maybe if I go all the way out to, like, Buckhead and, you know, far deep to the East, but when I'm in the city, I see Black couples. I see Black love. That's what I see. So to come out here and now it's this melting pot, I think, like he said, judges will be more lenient because they might have a cousin who's married to a black guy, or, you know, someone in their family is in an interracial marriage, which it changed the whole dynamic of maybe their thought process. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I did not have to go down the rabbit hole to just put the blank on, you know what I'm saying?
But, yeah, I know. My bad. I got to put on the tangent. I'm sorry.
Now, the point I want to get at about this, because I love where this is going, the point I like to get at as far as where me and Eric come from, and even Tyronica, as far as trying to help out young brothers and even some young sisters, is that in my experience, when I was younger, my mom probably gave me the most solid advice that any attorney or anybody could give me, and it was free, which was keep track of what she's doing on a day plan. Mm-hmm. And my first baby mama, I did not listen. I was like living in the moment. I got the reason I am who I am for the most part is because, except for when it comes to like tedious scheduling, like showing up a podcast. Sorry, guys. I usually have a photographic or semi-photographic memory. I can remember in detail stuff in the very past, and it's like mutant uncanny, like X-Men type shit. So when my ex comes at me with some BS, I could pull it out of the air and be like, oh no, on this date, the moon was at a crescent and it was cloudy outside and you had that blue dress on and this is what you said, you know, and I can break it down like that. So when I was younger, I never kept track of anything, but as time went on, the bullshit piled up and it did get hard for me to keep track of the dates of when she would not let me see the kids or when, you know, when she was being nice. So with the second one, when I was successful, and this is where I was trying to get at as far as being successful in court, is you have to keep track of that timeline. Because if you just go in there, and like you said, Isaac, you go in there with dreads and tattoos, no matter how articulate you are in your speech, no matter how timeline your thought process is in breaking down the storyline of what happened, the judge is not going to match your mentality, your voice with your Dr. Seuss look, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not trying to, you know, but in his mind, that's where he sees you as, you know what I mean?
Right.
He sees you as a cartoon character. He doesn't see you as one of his equals, you know what I mean? So he sees you as somebody below him, just like the nice guy would in court, you know, versus the good guy in court. You know what I mean? They have this expectation of what you should be at because they've reached this level of politeness or they've reached this level of studious being an attorney and then being a judge. So they look at you to see how your mentality is in court or how your etiquette is in court. And if you have this look about you, like you said, and one word slips out, you know, in Ebonics, or, you know what I mean? Or you lose your cool, you get labeled that angry black guy. And your whole goes right out the case, So what I try to tell young brothers is, Stop getting baited by her. You know, stop. If you're not fucking her, you know, and no disrespect, Tyronica, and cussing and stuff. But if you're not sleeping with her, then there is no reason to even be emotional about her. You know what I mean? Especially after all this time, and we all know the courts take forever. So if it's been 6-7 months since you've been able to get an established relationship or time frame with your kid, and you're going into court and you in there throwing up your hands and, you know, sighing and, you know, interrupting her and, you know, rolling your eyes and making it blatantly through body language that you're discrediting the court. The judge, just like the nice guy, is literally going to judge you and say, look, you're the angry black guy. She obviously has a point, you know what I'm saying? So let's give the kids to her until you can adjust your attitude. And it isn't until the father goes through the child support, goes through getting his shit together, goes through realizing, you know what, maybe it is me. Maybe I am being the bully and expecting and not putting my kid first. You know what I mean? Maybe I am just thinking that just because I do have the, you know, the testicles and I, you know what I mean? And I can make these kids or whatever, that I have certain rights, but some fathers don't sit back, and I'm not saying in your case, but a lot of fathers don't look at themselves in the mirror and say, am I the best thing for this child? Yeah. I may be able to make the money, but can I sit down and go to every parent-teacher conference? Can I go to, you know, every doctor's appointment? You know what I mean? And that's what it comes down to.
A lot of brothers are like, oh, it's unfair, it's unfair. But if you run in the streets and the judge is looking at you like, what do you do for a living? You're like, oh, I live in the studio.
That's not the place to watch out.
You got it. And that's the point I wanted to make. It's not all about, because there is a big factor when it comes to race and demographics. You're absolutely right. But it also comes to taking responsibility as a man and yourself. Mm-hmm. You can't always live in this hip hop world. You have to live in the real world.
Yeah. I think that's very important. Because I know going into court, and even since being a teacher, I have students now who I once taught, and they're like 18, 19. And some of them have had kids. And surprisingly, they've reached back to me. And I tell them all the time, I say, hey, look, I said, when you go into a court, I said, the way you present yourself from the second you walk into that room, I said, people are watching you. I said, and that judge is watching your behavior, how you express yourself, and how you treat that mother of your kids. Mm-hmm. I said, regardless of if that's your sworn enemy number one, I said, in that courtroom, you have to play the part. I said, because we don't get second chances. I said, as a Black father, you don't get the opportunity to make a judge see you in a different light if you mess up one time. You blow up in his courtroom, you say an obscene word, or like you said, a gesture, it's a wrap. And that's just from you speaking. If you got tattoos and locks and things like that, that alone, depending on who that judge is, they could have a pretense about who you are and not even know you. You know, so it's important that you recognize the system. But like you said, you got to have your stuff in order too. Because I'm not saying this, you know, for the viewers that's watching, I'm not saying this just for somebody who wants to be around their kids. But I'm saying like somebody that's working to actively be an influential aspect in their child's life. Because it's more than just like you said, I got the money, so we good. No, because I'm an educator. It's more than just money and feeding your kids. Are you making sure that they're doing their work assignments? Are you making sure that they're learning? Are you double checking behind it? You know, things like that, like little things that you may not think matter. They matter. You know, are you showing up for them and, you know, teaching them and being an example for them, living in the studio or in the streets? And just because you got money, that money can't raise kids.
Right.
That's not it. So I definitely agree with what you're saying, Norman. That's very important.
So what other many ways that you guys think actually causes like the parental alienation? Like I know, especially it comes with, you know, these parents not healing themselves or being hurt and taking things personally. Like, where do you think like the parental alienation aspect really stems from? Eric?
Finances. Okay. And what I mean by finances is, if okay, I'm gonna use my example. Okay, before I went to court and I got joint custody of my son, her child support payments for me was $400 and some odd every 2 weeks. That's $800 a month. Okay. So, and I was like, well, I said this, and it's like, well, what's she doing with the money? Okay. It as a parent, you're supposed to be there. You're supposed to actually be a parent, not worry about finances. Okay, you have two parents in the situation. One does something else, the other one does something else. Okay, so basically, what is she doing? I asked that question. And the magistrate at that time turned around and looked at her, and he asked her, what are you doing? So basically, then when we fast forward to now, they look at it as, well, Mrs. Smith, you are, I see that you are hostile, and that makes me think of how you're going to be to your child. I'm like, you're going off of a lie that she said back in 2018. We're talking about something that I filed in 2019. That does not apply here. And the judge, he looked at me again and was like, okay, he knows his stuff. He's right. But I'm going to put this there. So it's about her finances and what she's trying to do. Because case in point, she said that my son goes to a tutor and she pays a tutor $400 a month. Okay, if you're paying my son, paying a tutor for my son for this virtual learning $400 a month, then my son should not be failing. Mm-hmm. Okay, so and the judge saw that, but it's about finances. It really is. And until the system really makes a change, then stuff won't change. And how the system has to change is we have to get more fathers in either all across the board. From 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, okay, to say this is wrong, and we can prove that this is wrong, okay, to make some noise, okay. A lot of fathers either are afraid or don't know and don't want to, even when the situation with us, we're here, Norm and Tyronica, we're here, but they don't want to grasp us. It and just feed off of what we have to give them, so that's why I really say it's about finances. And if it was anything else, then I'd be shocked.
I also think that along with finances, for sure, I do agree with you 1,000% on that. I really think it's just broken individuals, like them not getting. The therapeutic help, and it doesn't actually have to mean going to see a therapist. Literally, just working on yourself. There's a million and one books that you can read and exercises you can do by yourself. I mean, I always strongly suggest a therapist, but I mean, there's plenty of work you can do on your own. So I really feel like another part of that outside the finances is definitely just the individual themselves not being who they should truly be. And being comfortable with themselves.
I agree with you 100%. Let's see here.
There are all the books. Don't Alienate the Kids, The Co-Parenting Survival Guide, and Joint Custody with a Jerk. Yeah. Wow.
Hey, that Joint Custody with a Jerk. Who made that? Who wrote that, Norman?
That was Joint Custody with a Jerk. That was Julie A. Ross and Judy Cochran.
Okay.
Now, it's funny that you said that, Tyronica, because when I went to court with my kids and knowing what I know here in Arizona and what resources I have, I was able to ask for a court-appointed attorney for the kids and a court-appointed counselor for the children outside of me and the mother. Okay. Now, I don't know if other communities or counties have these resources available because of their whole tax situation or whatever, but one of the advantages of being in a Republican-based, area is that they have a lot of resources for white people. So I use these resources to my advantage as much as possible. Being a mixed culture, if I can't get the resources, my mother's white, and I can have my mother go as an adversary for me, and they'll give her the information she needs and she'll bring it back to me. So that's, it's one of those things that you learn when you study Black history as far as being mulatto, versus helping out the field slaves, and how much the house slaves were able to help them out. So I treat my mom like the house slave. I'm like, go in there and go get this information and bring it to me so we can get the grant. So long story short, I got this attorney for the kids and I got this court appointed counsel. And with the attorney and the counselor, they were able to get information from the mother as far as with the subject of parental alienation, and the reasoning that I couldn't get information for, where I was in court trying to explain myself, and the judge would look at me and say, well, what would be the reason that she would have to do that? Or, you know, or why shouldn't I believe that she's keeping him from you because she's worried about getting into an argument in front of the kids with you, or whatever her excuse is. So what I did is, with the attorney, she was able to find out that her new boyfriend, why, and Eric knows about this, while we were in court, she was pregnant and growing in court. And the judge looked at her one day and was like, is that his kid? And she was like, no, this is, you know, somebody else. And then the kid's attorney all of a sudden started doing a background check on the dude, because now he's interacting with our kids. Mm-hmm. So long story short, the dude is, turns out he was from Florida, drug trafficking, weapons trafficking, the snitch, had to be transferred to Arizona. Because his crew was going to kill him in prison. Now he's here in Arizona. He's out for less than a month, meets my DM, you know, my kids ain't here, they're with her right now. So meets my dead ass baby mama in Walmart, and a month later she's pregnant by this Rick Ross wannabe. So with the attorney being attained, you know, and this is through taxpayers' money, this wasn't my money, he was able to find that out, and that caused a lot of strife from the judge to her. And the judge even had to tell her, look, you're making bad decisions. Why am I to believe you? And these now that I'm hearing these restraining orders do seem kind of bogus, you know, as far as you trying to claim that he's stalking you and all this stuff. You're keeping the kids from him. Mm-hmm. You're hanging around with people that are not, that you got, first of all, you hanging around with guys that are, your kids are calling them uncle. These people ain't related. We all know what uncle means. You know what I mean? So right. The judge is piling this stuff on. And as a man of color, again, as Isaac and Eric has said before, it takes time. So it took it took 4.5 years to go from 50-50, where I'm doing 80% more or less, and she's doing 20% as far as time with the kids. I got them full time. They're under school with me. I'm going to all the parent-teacher conferences, any surgeries that happen. My daughter had her tonsils and adenoids taken out. I took care of everything from start to finish. Mom didn't even show up for the surgery. And it was because mom had got into a domestic violence altercation with the new guy from prison with their second kid under her belt. Woo! Yeah. So as far as the system works if you know how to use the system. The problem is we get a lot of young brothers that think that just because they have a dick, that they have rights, or just because they're an American, you know, they have rights. And that's not the case. If you're an American, all you are is a battery. You're here to charge the system. You're here to charge the system with finance. You're not here to be a thinker. You're here to be you. That's why you have a social security number. That's why you have a birth certificate with a serial number on it. You're a commodity. You are a stock in America's market. You are a stock. And this goes into my debt, knowing about debt, my paralegal life, but a lot of fathers don't look at it like this because they don't see the parallel. But when it comes to your debt and your finances and your lineage and everything else, unless you're born into money, you're at the bottom of the heap. They don't want you to come up. They don't teach you entrepreneurship in school. They don't teach any of this stuff to make sure that as the American dream happens nowadays. It was the dream when you first came in and we wanted all these immigrants to pay all these taxes. But now that we're filled up and these white people or these Republicans, I shouldn't say white people, I should say these conservative Republicans feel that the country has enough immigrants in it to where they're doing the jobs that they don't want to do. And they live in the places that they don't necessarily want to live, and they can tax them differently according to their housing and their schooling to make sure that their schools are less reputable and everything else. It comes down to your finances. So the point I'm getting at is this: when you're born with your birth certificate and your social security number, you're a stock. You're guesstimated on your lifespan and how much money you are expected to make from the time of your life to the time of your death. And this is where it comes into where Eric, being a sovereign citizen, doesn't have to worry about this. They don't see him as a stock because he's a sovereign citizen. He doesn't have that social security number that they can track and keep track of his debt like they can a regular person. And in that aspect, he's got a leg up. But when it comes to hard times, if he doesn't have his finances together, he can't use the system that we pay into. He can't get welfare. He can't get, you know, all that stuff. That's my, and in my theory, and I don't know enough about his, you know, his status to dictate what's going to happen in court. But from more that I talk, the more that I talk to Eric, the more that I've come to realize is that the judges don't really know what to do with him either. And I think that's why he's having such a hard time in court, because they're like, well, do we slam the book at him or do we rip a lawsuit? You know what I mean? Right. We don't know how to handle, you know, a sovereign citizen, because he's not a cop. You know what I mean? In that aspect, right, where he has, you know, cops are sovereign citizens and they could get away with whatever because they have a union behind him. But he has education. And the judges aren't educated under sovereign citizen in dealing with family courts. So anyways, I know I babble and I have a lot to say. It's not convenient. But anyways.
I'm sorry, Tyronica. I wasn't expecting you to hit the sovereign citizen thing, though.
You have to bring it up for the point. So in your guys' opinion, do you think there's ever a good reason for parental alienation?
Abuse. I wouldn't call it parental alienation if it's legitimate. So I'm going to use my wife's circumstances, because I had a child before we got married. She had a child. And they have a court order. And recently, it came to our attention that the father is going through some mental health things, and it required him to go to rehabilitation. And so in those instances, you can't fully fulfill the duties of your order if you are not 100% whole yourself. I think that goes back to what Norman was saying, is that it's more than just the financial part. Like, are you up for the daily challenge of being a parent? You get what I'm saying? Because anybody can say to Norman, like, oh, I can raise some kids, but do you have to get the kids up like Norman? Make sure they're dressed for bed like Norman. Make sure they're off to school. Making sure that they're performing well in school. Go talk to those teachers. All right. If Norman gets a call in the middle of the day, like, hey, your child's not feeling good, he has to figure out a way to, hey, am I gonna have to leave to go get them? Is my mom gonna go get them? Like, the everyday things that you cannot account for. You get what I'm saying? It's not like I don't know, something like that's routine, like every single day. It changes. Parenting, it's not cookie cut. There's no book that you can pull off the shelf and say, if you read this, 100% it's gonna go perfectly. That's not parenting. And so I believe in instances where it may not be in the child's best interest because the parent is not in the best mind state to actually fulfill the full duties of being a parent, then it's understandable. But I think it also should come with saying, hey, let's communicate about this, because it never should be, I'm just alienating you, and then there's no conversation, it's dead. Okay, look, you're going through this right now, so let's look at a time to where it's better suitable for you. Let's look at a check-in. And I think just to point to Tyronica, your other question, emotions are a big part of this. And I think a lot of people have to understand that you got to take the emotions out of it, especially when we're talking about dealing with it through the system, because the emotions don't matter. Your emotions, how I feel about the mother of my child and how she feels about me, does not matter in regards to what is best for the child. And I think if you're moving in that direction, then I think it's understandable. But for some crazy reason or fake restraining orders because, oh, he's, when he put the child in the car, he slammed the door. I don't feel safe. No, that's not okay. That's not okay.
Yeah, and even in those situations, when it's a domestic situation, I definitely understand mothers who want to get away, or even fathers who want to get away from the other parent. And it's like, okay, us meeting up. So that's when you get to figure out, you know, a middleman, someone right. that can do that. Because even still, it's like me and my ex, we were toxic together, but he was never a bad father. So that's something I got to learn how to separate with myself. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I can hate you to the end of the earth, but right. I'm never going to keep you away from her. And it did come to a period of time where I almost fell in that woman trap. I almost did it. And it was literally 2 days I kept her from him. And I was literally demanding him to just go to therapy. I'm like, just go to therapy. Like, I'm in therapy. She's in therapy. Me, it's just like, it's really not fair that us two have to go to therapy and you don't. So it's just like, just start going. Like, I'm not saying you have to complete it, just start going. And then during that process, you know, my dad's calling me and I'm like, okay, Taronica. So it's like, can you make him do something? Cause it's like, at the end of the day, even though it's something you really want and you know it will end up benefiting his relationship with his child and you guys can have a better co-parenting relationship, it's like you can't force him to do that. So it's like, really, what are you fighting for? So I had to have that hard conversation with myself, which a lot of other parents don't do, which could have led that to being not just those 2 or 3 days, could have led to like months and stuff like that. So it's just like, okay, what is it that you're really trying to accomplish? And it's like, right. You know what? If my daughter is happy and that's something that he doesn't want to do and he's going to figure out alternative ways or just figuring out how to keep emotions in check, then unfortunately that's just something I have to be okay with. So along from that, because that happened, you know, last year, we've greatly grown from that. Fortunately, we're in a way better space. Anything goes on, like he's one of my first calls. So it's just like, I'm glad we grew from that. And then he's, you know, committed to doing other stuff to better himself. And so am I. We're both in like in different programs. So it's just like, you have to take that time out. And then especially me coming from a woman and letting other women know who are listening to this, check yourself. Because like I said, I fell into that trap literally because it was only 2 days. That's still not an excuse. So it's just check yourself and realize what your real intention is for why you're behaving the way that you are with the other parent.
Yeah. I think another thing too is part of the parental alienation is probably pride, and that kind of goes along with emotion. But you have this unhealthy, well, at least for most of us that are mature, when you get to the point of court, hopefully you're not having relations with your ex, because that gums up the world.
I'm just gonna throw your whole case under the bus.
As a paralegal, I'm gonna be blunt as hell. If you're in court and you're paying child support and she's still letting you fuck, she is a trick and you are a hoe by legal standards. That's exactly what it is. So you need to think about what you're doing before you commit to going to court. Now, as far as the pride thing, as long as you're not sleeping with her, what I think a lot of the parental alienation happens is that there's this unhealthy sibling rivalry that happens between the father and the mother, as far as the affection or the game of winning in family court. Who's gonna owe me money? Who's gonna do this? Or how can I make you look bad worse than I am? Or how is my secrets going to be detrimental to me compared to your secrets type thing. And it gets into this unhealthy, give and take, you know, back and forth in court, and the best interest of the child gets disconnected. So both of you are looking like idiots in court shooting each other, but the child is, where's the child in here? You know what I'm saying? You know, dodging these bullets since both of you are pieces of shit. You know what I mean? So like Tyronica said, you really, male and female, you have to really sit back, especially if you're going to spend money on counsel or an attorney or
advocacy or something like that, you really want to sit back and look at yourself and say, look, am I really the best parent, or would I be a better parent as a weekend warrior where I can prepare every 2 weeks to get my child for the weekend and give him the most incredible fucking weekend in 2 weeks instead of having him 50% of the time and he just sees me miserable and every once in a while we get to do stuff. You know what I mean? So you really have to look at yourself and say, what is he really, or he or she, going to get out of me by me alienating her, or by me trying to make her look bad, you know, in court, or, you know, even in person? Because your children grow up eventually. And I have my previous relationship, my 21-year-old Julian is here now. He's sitting on my couch, thank God. But he came back into my life 2 years ago when he was 19. And I lost him when he was 10. So when he came back, he had all these stories about how his mom was this abusive. Even when I called his mom and talked to him, his mom had nothing nice to say about him, you know, and it was just completely bogus. So I took him in, you know, and he's my son. I wouldn't say I took him in. He came back home and he is thriving. I don't see anything that she tried to accuse him of being or try to accuse him of or anything. I don't see none of that. But what I do see is healing. What I do see him is him soaking up knowledge of what he lost because she won the game. You know what I mean? She got custody of him and was able to take him to Florida. And then once he won the game, she didn't know what to do. It's like a dog chasing a bone. You know what I mean? The dog spends all this time chasing around, gets the, doesn't know what to do. It's bored as hell. It ain't got no competition. It ain't got nothing to do. So now she's won, puts this, you know, father figure in front of him. The father figure is basically abused by her, you know, more so than I was because I'm an alpha. He was more of a beta male, but he ends up leaving. Now she gets no child support from this other dude, has more kids with him. You know what I'm saying? Brainwash my kids, trying to brainwash my son to the point where she was trying to have him change his name when, you know, at 10 years old. Come on now. The parental alienation should be only in the, should only be used in the knowledge of abuse or molestation. If you are in court and you were trying to get, let's say your court date dictates that you have visitations every 2 weeks, but your son comes to you and says, yo, I was at mom's house, uncle so-and-so grabbed my weenie, whoop, whoop, whoop. Visitation stop right there. There ain't no ifs, ands, but about it. We go directly to the courthouse and we file for an emergency injunction and we get a modification done. There ain't no back and forth text messaging. Well, so-and-so said this, and where was your uncle at? Woo, woo, woo. There ain't no discussion.
Right.
That's the difference between being the nice guy and the good guy. The nice guy will fucking argue and debate and try to get his way and try to negotiate. The good guy will do what is necessary for the moment because he knows it's the right thing to do. Consistent. That's the difference. Don't go to court being the nice guy saying, well, I did this and I paid child support and I dropped off clothes and I did this. The good guy does it without even having it. That should be expected. You shouldn't even have to say it.
Right.
Right.
And then Isaac, for all the males that are listening, what advice would you give them for, you know, handling parental alienation or even preventing it?
A big part of it, again, is, first of all, check yourself. Make sure that what you are asking of the mother, that you are fully capable and ready to commit to. I have 3 girls and a son on the way. And the best thing that ever happened to me was my first daughter with my baby mother. Because it made me grow, because I had to take that moment, as you all said, step back and say, is what I'm doing for the best of the child? Not about me trying to play the game, like Norman said, like, oh, I'm trying to win. I'm trying to come out. I'm trying to come out clean. I'm not trying to have to pay no child support. I'm trying to get the child. That's not what it's about. It's about first checking yourself, making sure that you're able to do what it is that you are saying you want. So if they're saying you want full custody, are you really ready for that load? Because like Norman said, it might be best for you to be a weekend dad. but it also may be best for you to know your child. For my child that I have with my baby mother, it's best for me to be a weekend dad, my summer visitations, my holiday visitations, because I know my daughter. Mm-hmm. And I know the relationship she has with her mother. And I know that how it could emotionally impact my daughter if I ripped her from her mother. Mm-hmm. So I took the time to step back and say, what is going to be best for the child? And then the second thing is get those emotions out of it, man. Because a lot of times when people are in these situations, you're not with that person no more. Mm-hmm. But at one point you were. At one point you were. At one point you lay with that man or that woman. So have enough respect for you all's child to handle yourself the best way accordingly. You cannot control what somebody else does. But like Norman said, we're not trying to be just the nice guy. Well, I did this, I did that. First of all, you're supposed to. You don't get no cookie. You don't get no award for that. If your child needs clothes, a child is constantly growing. I don't need the mother of my child to tell me that my child is growing for me to run to Target and Walmart, put together a box and ship it to Atlanta. I don't need her to tell me that. Because I know she's 7 years old, and I know in 2 months, she's likely not going to fit the clothes that we bought her in January. I know that. That you don't get an award for that. You get what I'm saying? But if something is not right, handle it the right way. Handle it the right way. Going back and forth, you're never going to win that battle. That's not how you win that battle. You keep a track record. Check yourself. Respect that other parent. And keep a track record. And I'm talking about a detailed track record. Because you can't go in there with a couple text messages and she sent me the middle bird emoji and you think that's going to get it. No, sir. A judge needs to see a paper trail. They're black and white. It's paperwork. It's legal. You know what I'm saying? They're not into the he say, she say. They want to see it in black and white. And you have to be able to support that document. When I went to court for the first time, the first thing they asked for was, Mr. Martin, what support and documentation do you have? And being young and ignorant and not knowing anything about the system, because I'm a young black kid from the east side of Atlanta. So when I think of court and police, I'm cool on all y'all. I went in there blind. I went in there blind. And then I came out and they hit me with that high number, I ain't gonna even get into that. But they hit me with that child support number and I was just like, I'm gonna go broke. Like, I don't know what's gonna happen. But I wasn't prepared. Because when he asked me, what proof, what documentation do you have to present to the court? I ain't have nothing. All I had was my word. And all he saw was these dreads. I didn't have a hand tattoo at the time. All he saw was my locks. And I had an angry face. I was angry. Because I didn't want to be there, and I was mad at her. I was mad.
Hey, Isaac, piggyback on what you say, man. When the judge asked me the exact same thing, what proof do you have? I said, Your Honor, may I approach the bench? He said, go ahead.
Boom. And you take it out.
You have any proof? I said, Your Honor, I said, if you want to go through this, the emails coincide with the dates. And I said, and the report cards also coincide with the months. And not only that, but the payments of any child support or any daycare are loaded in there, including the days that or the weeks I had to pay for her, as well as all the police reports between her and her baby.
Whoa.
Right.
So that's how you do it.
When we say documentation, that's it. That's documentation. It has to be consistent. Consistency is the key to parenting on all sides of the spectrum.
Yep.
You have to be consistent. And if you're going through a situation like this, young, old, meeting, whatever, have your documentation. Because a judge is not there with you day to day. A judge is not getting the text message as you read them. A judge is not sitting on the phone call, is not at the pickups and drop-offs. You have to have that documentation to prove what you were saying about this person, because it's otherwise it's just he say she say. And the judge don't got time for that. They'll dismiss you so quick, like they did me. And then we went into mediation. Young, not understanding mediation, not understanding that I could have asked for a continuation of my court case. I know now, but I didn't know then. And so here I am, alone, scared, signing. And that's now, what I... 2-3 years later, you might be fighting a whole different battle. Mm-hmm. You better go in there the right way.
And that's what, and with the mock trials, Norman, you saw, that's what we, I try to, Isaac, you don't know, a part of our program, the Winning Strategies program, we try to have fathers go through a mock trial so they know how to go into court, so they know how to speak, have a diction that is court ready, not street ready.
Right.
Okay. And just talk with them and just get them prepared, because the beauty of it is I had two of my former fathers that went through my program score me. Okay. Mm-hmm. About how I came to court dressed, about how what I said and how I spoke. And two of them was like, "Mr. Eric, you got this thing. You just gotta calm down. You just gotta talk it out. So they won't alienate you. So they won't do things. But you got this." And that's what I try to get fathers to understand. You know, have their documentation there, have everything there so it could just work in their behalf. Okay. We know that the courts don't always work in their behalf because right. I have fathers putting in appeals now. So yeah. I don't mean to take up your time, Taronica, but yeah.
Oh no, this is great.
How long was? Oh, are we way over time right now, or
no?
Does it matter? Okay. Yeah. So with what Eric said, I wanted to make a point for the young listeners out there, as far as using winning strategies and as a concept instead of just hiring an attorney from the get start and for saving money. The reason why Eric, Taronica, and myself are here, and a lot of other advocacy groups, you know, that are numerous to mention, do this is because we believe in DIY, do it yourself. Mm-hmm. We don't believe in having some attorney come in, rape you for all your income on top of child support, which you're probably going to end up paying, especially as a single father, because of the stereotypes and everything that's out there. There are different levels different stages when it comes to your filing and even going to trial. And I wrote some of this down. Basically, it goes filing, established paternity, child support, modification, civil issues, and trial. If you can learn DIY all the way through these levels, you don't need an attorney. But let's say, you know, not all of us are astute. Not all of us are the same breed. So just because and Eric and Tyronica or whatever have immersed ourselves in the legal system doesn't mean our cousin is as adverse as we are. So what you want to do is try to take our advice and try to get as far up the DIY ladder as you can. That way, if you do need legal counsel, you're not spending money on day one. You're spending money on the trial. You've already done all the legwork. You've already done all the skip tracing. You've already got all the police reports. So you don't get charged for all that little BS from those attorneys from getting all that stuff if you decide that the trial is getting out of your hands and DIY is not in your best interest. Then you can pass it on to somebody else, but at least you then have the knowledge to know that you're not just putting it in somebody's hands to be bamboozled later. And then you're trying to figure out, was I overcharged? Where are all these emails about, you know, all these being charged 10 cents to reply to an email, being charged $2.50, you know, just to type up a letter, you know, all these little things add up. And I used an attorney in my second case. And when I did, because of how knowledgeable I am in the system and because of how facetious my ex was, the court felt like we were wasting time because we were just in and out with modification. He said, she said at first, da, 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 da. Once I started grasping on and started realizing that less is more, that's when I started keeping track in the day planner where I was giving her enough slack to hang herself. Because every time that I went in the court every month for every little violation, it just pissed the judge off. He wants you to go in there with a leap of evidence. He doesn't want you going in there nitpicking. So one of the things that you want to think about when going into this is what level of sophistication you're at when you're trying to get custody or establish paternity or trying to get your kids. Are you going to take this all the way to the limit, or are you only going to take it this far and then hand it off when it doesn't go your way? So that's another aspect that you want to look at. But with Eric's winning strategies, especially with the modification or with the mock trials, he allows you to get, especially for the new fathers, allows you to get a taste of what emotionally you're going to have to go through, because these are all strangers looking at you. And the biggest fear of anybody in life is public speaking. So when you're going in there as a father who's emotionally charged at this woman who's thrown false, you know, restraining orders at you, has thrown accusation after accusation, has alienated you from your kid. I got a fly in here. Has alienated you from your kid and done all this stuff to you. And then all of a sudden you got this white judge, for the lack of a better term, looking at you, asking you, well, why are you angry? Or why are you acting like
right.
this? Or why didn't you do this? Or why are you, you know, responding this way? Because he legitimately doesn't understand your culture. He doesn't understand why you walked away to avoid a domestic situation. And if you can't articulate that, or if you did not have that written down, or if you did not have that instant and some kind of, you know, timeline order, all he's hearing you do is fish as being the nice guy. All he's hearing you is being the victim. You have to keep track of everything. You have to make sure that you pick your battles, and you have to make sure that you know your limit. And if you're not going to be the superhero, then just step aside and let her be the superhero. And you just be that weekend dad, or be that part-time dad that gives the financial support and is there for the graduations and is there for the, you know what I mean, for the milestones, you know what I mean? Just because you can't be there for every meal, you know what I mean? It doesn't mean you're not a dad. It doesn't mean give up. It just means that you know your lane and your position. But as far as alienation, again, unless there's abuse involved or the father gives up his knowledge,
legal
up
right. his life, right.
there shouldn't be any alienation when it comes to your kid.
So this is going to, this is the ending towards, is there anything that any of you want to put into the space that maybe you didn't get to say or we didn't get to talk about today?
Go to the Norman Nick Show, like and subscribe. It helps my analytics.
And make sure you guys do go to his YouTube channel, because he touches on a lot of the parental alienation. He has a lot of cool videos that explain different situations and how to prevent it. I was mind blown when I seen some of his videos, and I was just like, oh, okay, so this is like real life. Also, you can also download the Parent Playground app. They are featured in there along with Winning Strategies. How do we find you, Winning Strategies?
Winning Strategies, I mean, www.winningstrategiesfcc.org. Okay. Winning Strategies spelled out. And also winningstrategies.fcc@gmail.com. So whenever you want to reach out and just ask what's going on, how do I prepare? I'm here to help.
And Isaac, did you want to give your social media out for any of the fathers who wanted to reach out to you to thank you for your time today?
Yes, most definitely. If you look me up on social media, you can find me on Instagram at @itsikeiyke Martin. I'm an educator. I'm also a personal trainer and wellness coach. And I'm here to help any young fathers who just need some advice or a listening ear. As you are navigating through the challenges of co-parenting, all right? But you're not alone, and we're here to help.
All right. Well, we're at the point where we have our end of episode challenge. Make sure you share your tips on how you, as a parent, prevent parental alienation. You can answer this in #ShiftHappensPodcast on any of your social media platforms. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Make sure you download the app in the Apple and Google Play stores. Thank you for listening to Winning Strategies, Norman Nix and Isaac discussing parental alienation. And this is Shift Happens, the podcast.